This is Jason Nimro. You are listening to Cohen Meander, and we're working on, I got a project here and a project there. Kind of bounce between them as I get ideas on it. Today is thoughts on family sovereignty. The biggest, at least in just my first cursory look at it, the first challenge for the concept of family sovereignty, the first institution, organization that is going to insinuate itself upon your attempts to claim family sovereignty is the government school. I enjoin anyone to read copiously of John Taylor Gatto. I hope his things remain available to the world. If anything happens to larger, you know, like websites, things like that, places where his recordings were kept, I've stored a certain amount of it on my Gopher server, gopher.quix.us, and Dig Down Audio. I think audio, and just after that, you should see John Taylor Gatto. I'm not saying that I've got all of his stuff, but I've got some. Probably enough to be helpful to you. Anyway, so my thoughts on government schooling is as much as you can do. I know it's difficult for resource-strapped people. They're going to have to work as usual. People have to get creative when they don't have much money or many resources or whatever. It's always been so. Since I think my most creative periods came when I was rather poor and had a big family and needed to be creative about how to solve issues, how to handle problems. Anyway. There's also another name you need to know. His name is John Holt. I don't know if he was ever, I think he was a school teacher once as well. It's, you know, I guess it's really not interesting that most of the critics of compulsory government schooling were teachers or administrators at some point, able to see what the problem really was, what the issues were, and how one could take care of them. John Taylor Gatto, although he was a darling of homeschooling, I don't think he immediately allied himself with it. I think he was interested in I don't know if it was really reform. He was more interested in teachers taking the power that they have, which is, believe it or not, quite sizable. A teacher backed by the school industry is almost an unstoppable force in the life of a child. it's easy to crush parents when you have that much power before you, and parents are basically, for whatever reason they have to do it, are basically willing to sign over their kids. You know, it's made a lot easier that this is what the government expects, and it has some structures to punish you if you don't comply with their demands. That your child have to be at school for a long time. No matter whether good things are really happening there or not, that doesn't matter. The whole point is that it's there. And to be honest, it ends up being tied to money. A lot of homeschooling is tolerated because your local school district gets the money for your child's education, whether you use it or not. That's what makes them powerful. There has been, and usually makes them not really care. I'm still getting the money as if your kid was there. If I don't have to worry about you, because you have to understand how a lot of these institutions view children. They see them as a cost. It's not really a cost-benefit analysis. It's more of a cost trouble analysis. You know, the whole attitude about kids is kids are trouble. Kids have to be managed. The most efficient way they can find to manage kids is good. And I don't want to speak badly of efforts of many people, including government officials, to try to better educate your children while they are in state custody, basically. But you have to understand, they are only one group of people, and their influence over the total sphere of this is only somewhat. If your child does get a really good education at a school, you should feel extremely blessed or happy or lucky or however you want to state it, knowing that given the whole milieu of the schooling industry, this isn't something that it particularly cares about. The proponents of educational reform toward actually doing a better job of schooling children learned a long time ago that they have to really put the screws to it. They have to find legislative ways of forcing schools to even give a moment's notice to that. Now, individual teachers, many teachers are wonderful, but they're fighting against a tendency not to really care, to try to make the storage and management of this child unit as economical as possible, therefore being able to use whatever excess money they can pull from whatever money they're given for other needs. Whether, you know, this isn't, and sometimes it's for good things. Most of the time, it's really not for good things. It's to enrich somebody. You know, we're going to buy this new kind of cool whiteboard. It's just a big computer / television screen that has sensors that you can you can write on the screen and it shows up as, you know, multicolored marks, you know. Kind of a cross between a TV and an overhead projector. But these things are amazingly expensive. But, you know, schools get grants, schools get, you know, schools can dink around a little bit with certain funding streams. There's all kinds of games, money games that get played. And schools have to employ people who get kind of a weird understanding of this. I think I was trying to be groomed as somebody who could do that, not for education specifically, but for public health. And it creates this bizarre, subculture of almost the deception, saying you're going to use certain monies from grants or other things. States started having fun with it. They started doing something grant-like too. And they didn't have enough money to spread across all of like a state's school districts equitably and usefully by some kind of formula. If it didn't really produce enough money, what they do is they make it into a grant. Then they tell people to come up with their own particular proposals for how they would use some award if they got it. And I don't want to get into how they get all this stuff done and how this all works and how much time and effort in the end this really steals away from what should be the business of schooling, which is to educate children. And let me tell you, the best teachers, the teachers that you really want around, the ones that get all of the awards, it really doesn't end up being the ones that have the best educated kids. It ends up being the teacher that drags in the most money. You know, that kind of says, hey, wait a minute. Why don't we go for this little grant here? And you go, how'd you ever learn about that grant? Says, oh, well, I've spent time that I probably should have been spending trying to help educate children or give children more opportunities to learn. Can I be honest? That's really the big, joke secret of the education industry is that the less you sequester children's time and spend it and use it up, the whole problem is a whole lot of the evaluation of teachers is how much contact time you have with the children. You can measure it that way a lot of places too. And that's actually counterproductive to a child's learning. At best, they can only learn what that teacher is prepared to be able to explain. And it doesn't even work well that way. You know, there's a thousand different reasons why kids aren't going to be interested in what the teacher's telling. You know, they have to get up and play a clown, entertain. The most interesting teachers are half comedians because they can at some level keep children's interests through entertainment and try to sprinkle in a little bit of education too. And let me tell you, the ones that do that love teaching the most. The kids love the teachers the most, and And, you know, and I don't even know if there's much education in there. All stuck in this room together. Anyway, so. Don Holt, I don't precisely remember his particular thing. I think he taught like sixth grade for a very little amount of time. I don't know what his actual training was in. It might not have been in education. Which is also a thing. You have to have a very particular training to be able to be a teacher. Some states, now I'm talking the United States now. I can't speak to other countries. It's very much, you know, some states have gotten with alternative licensure, but it really is just getting you in that door. And after that, you have to take a lot of leveling courses to get indoctrinated into the kind of education the current regime wants to see. Of course, you know, all teachers are angels. All teachers are wonderful and given lots of strokes by society, you know. Nobody questions how wonderful teachers are because, you know, that is our society's human shield, is to put children. You don't want to say anything bad about your teacher because your teacher could take it out on your kids. And let me tell you, the worst thing you can do as a society is have anything bad attributed to you through your kids. That's why we have such atrocious young people today. People you can't really do much with. And ones that don't really have any intelligence besides how to scream at people and get noticed and things like that. And we tend to lionize these people. Who's a good example of this? Greta Thunberg. She, you know, she was a darling. You couldn't say anything bad about her. And was she being prepped? Yes. Was she being groomed? Yes. It says now that she's older and she doesn't get that cute, I'm not sure she was really a very cute girl, cute person. But now she tries to do the same thing as a nearly 30-year-old woman. And she's finding out that nobody really cares because she lost that 14-year-old, oh, isn't that cute gravitas? And screaming at adults and saying how horrible they are for the world they're leaving to her. And you go, you know what? Now you're an adult. Now what are you going to do about it? You can't just go and bellyache and complain about how horrible the adults are. You're now one of the adults. Now you're expected to actually do something and feed a family. And do, I have no impression that she has taken on any greater responsibilities than being a very overage child activist. Now she's just an older former child activist that people kind of every once in a while say, whatever happened to Greta Thunberg? And now you say, well, she's still doing this stuff, but nobody listens to her anymore. And you go, yeah, she's not a child anymore. Anyway, so I as usual, I'm hopping and bopping around to a lot of things. There's several ways you can do your own education. There are some philosophies, and I don't totally subscribe to them. It's called unschooling, where you pretty much let a child run their own education. I'm not I'm not particularly a proponent of that at this point. I probably was a little bit more in the past because it was explained in very glowing terms, you know. My child just loves cartography. They spend all day looking at maps all the time. So they said, well, let's really feed on that. Let's really do that. And they got them involved with the geological survey and stuff like that. Now they have a fine job doing cartography for some oil company, for instance. They really got into it. You go, that's wonderful, but that's only one aspect of what we really want out of life. Sadly, education has really focused on its ability to prepare you for a career. They try to downplay the fact that most people, even when they chase down their childhood, I don't know what you should call them, fetishes, whatever, when they've really ran that one to ground, you find out that give them another 5 years as an adult and they might not be very interested in that anymore. And they may want to do something else. And if that's all you've invested their entire educational time in trying to, you know, ooh, this is really exciting. You know, kids are excited about their education. And it's like, yeah, but what happens when they say, you know what, cartography was fun when I was a kid. I really got a kick out of it. I don't do it anymore. I used to be one of those. I used to love looking at maps. I think I was wanting to just be someplace else all the time. I still have issues with that. It makes my wife crazy. What are you looking at? Oh, I'm looking at land and houses. She goes, we're not moving, Jason. She's tired. We haven't moved a ton, but we've moved more than she ever wanted to. She is a sincere homebody. She wants to make her rut, work her rut, do all those things, and that's great. This is, I married her, and the commitment is to us together. You know, she has been very accommodating of my need to kind of explore a bit, and there's other ways to explore. Anyway, so you know, now I'm working on other things. I still write. That's my basic activity. And when I'm not distracting myself foolishly. But if my education and schooling would have been around something that some teacher caught me doing during an unguarded moment, and they said, oh, it's cartography, which it could have been at the time. This is, I might have started a career in cartography. And if it got boring after 5 years because I was doing, you know, the crappy work, almost everybody starts in any field of endeavor doing the crap work that the master really doesn't want to mess with, you know, that's not interesting to him. There was people who thought I would be a draftsperson. Says, I'm glad I wasn't because, to be honest, said there was no particular, at least no future I saw in it particularly that would interest me. Constantly being anal about drawings. I think my brother might have done really well in that, but he didn't go that way. Anyway, so unschooling is where you pretty much just leave it up to whatever interests a child during time. And that over the course of a childhood, you should cover everything that's probably reasonably important. And can I be honest? I don't think that's actually true. I think that's kind of a pipe dream. It's something that somebody can talk about and get them into certain learning things. You know, it's just, I don't think it's a bad springboard. I think almost everything is a springboard. And it really becomes a question. It says, What do you as parent think is important for your child to know? And are you going to be broadband and get everything perfectly? Of course not. In fact, that's not even particularly interesting. You need to have a good mix of structured things that you think are important. Reading, writing. You know what? I would tend to be very careful with these kinds of things. School is really good at beating reading and writing out of a child's interest by the time they end school. It's like, I don't want to open up another book. I don't want to read another word. I don't want to, you know, because they turn reading into a horrible, horrible chore. And if you don't do it well, they really beat you over the head with it and tell you, you got to read better. It's important to have time to do the important things recreationally too. You know, I'm reading this book because I have to do a book report on it later. And of course, I'm probably going to try and do that book report in a very slipshod way, you know, because this is being forced on me and I don't like it. It's really easy to kill off good impulses in people. But it's also easy to allow too much free time. I think that was my biggest problem as a parent, was I probably allowed my kids way too much free time. And they used it in a variety of strange ways. But to be honest, at the end of the day, all of my children are doing enough work that they need to do to get their needs met. This is really quite interesting. They do other things. I think by and large, I don't think they really pound me too hard about my outlook on education. I think they really saw me do a lot of my, I don't know if the right term is an avocation, but that's what I do. Not your vocation, what you do for money, but your avocations. Things that you do because you feel compelled to do them, or because you enjoy them, stuff like that. I don't know if it really ends up being work-life balance. I don't know how that works. We've really drilled that into the younger generation, and business is really getting quite upset about business resources being used way beyond what they think is appropriate for personal pursuits, you know. Using their internet access to do Cyber Monday purchases once they get back to work, instead of doing it at home where they should be doing more of their avocations. So anyway, I find it interesting because I get a lot of, I tend to get a lot of these things in my, I don't know if it's really called a news feed, but it kind of substitutes as one that Google puts out based on what it sees you playing around with, looking around with on their browser, the kind of words that pop up in your emails. I don't know if they really look at the actual inside text of the email. I'm sure some group has forced them to stop behaving like that. But they can see where these things come from. I've also noticed, strangely enough, I've been getting some weird texts. with links in them. I don't touch the links because I know they come from people that, I'm not interested in whatever they're trying to peddle. But I think the internal algorithm from Google picks that up. People don't worry so much about text as they do about emails, apparently. And I've been getting these interesting news stories that are tied to websites that it has picked up, I think, from my texts that I never initiated. You know, just kind of blind texts. I mean, and it's interesting. It's an interesting new form of trying to do marketing or trying to talk people into it. And the actual headline will be something very, very strange because people are drawn to interesting, strange stuff. I used to try and teach a class. See, here I am going back to education, which is funny, on how to be a good media consumer. And says, to be honest, I said, I don't think there is a lot of good media consumption anymore. It's a lot of tricky ways to get your eyeballs, get your attention, and to elicit some sort of payment for it. It's often really bad English. Apparently, it's cheaper to get somebody from Southeast Asia to string together English words than it is to get AI to generate something that's supposed to trick you into a good English speaker. You know, I don't know. It's always this weird race to the bottom and the very least you can do to get the very most out of it. That's always the way it goes. I'm sorry. I started this trying to talk about schooling, compulsory government schooling, which should be avoided as much as you can handle. In New Mexico, for instance, it's got very, very lax homeschooling laws. One of the reasons why I really was happy that we lived in New Mexico while our children were growing up. It was a great place to raise the kids. I think it's really not a particularly good place to retire. But I have a house here that's paid for. If I could trade this house that was paid for, you really can't do that. You really end up just needing to sell something and then buy something else, which really means that you need to have a lot of money to begin with so that you can buy what you want someplace else with a better circumstance and then you sell whatever you have someplace else to compensate for it. Anyway, so there's kind of that. Lisa gets accustomed to places and she doesn't like a lot of change. I can't say I'm really a big fan of change either, but I you know, but that's kind of the way that goes. You know, this isn't going to be a Cohen Meander recording. Because I've ranged way too far from what I do, which I always do. So not a whole lot of Cohen Meander recordings going on. But they're still out there. I put them up on the Gopher site. You can play around with them. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I want to talk about. I'm trying to do something for which I will probably write more, and it will be far more interesting. Because to be honest, like I said, you have to be careful of unschooling, on some level, but only on some. I think one should do about 75% unschooling and about 25% of more of family culture stuff. Yeah, probably, you know, 70-25-5. 5% what government says. Damn it, I did it again. Oh, suck. Oh. I always miss this turn. Especially in the mornings, I cannot see the turn for the sun in my eyes. And I end up missing the turn and going down the dirt road. Of course, it's not very well done. I'm tearing up tires and suspension. I think there's really something to be said for taking the more straightforward roads in the mornings, and I can take this back road in the evenings when I don't, when I'm not really, I don't really care. Anyway. Oh. Well, regardless. Oof. I wonder how many other cars do that. A lot. I wonder if those people at that thing say, oh yeah, if you were the only one that did that. I go, yeah, it's early morning and I can't hardly see a thing for the sun being right in my eyes. Anyway, oh, sorry. I really think it has a lot more to do with, anyway, education. Said, the school systems are really overblown. The wonderful things that they can do. Most of it is kind of a Gordian educational knot. This is really going to make your child's life at school much nicer. You know, we do this and your kid's going to be in the band and you go, that's great. It says once they turn 18, guess what they're going to do? They're not going to be in the band anymore. And it's like, and what did it prepare you for? And you go, I don't know. And they come up with all these weird, almost leadership skills about, you know, being able to keep people in line and doing things like that, making a bunch of people work together. And you go, well, maybe two people in the band get that kind of experience. Most people are the people that march around and do exactly what they're supposed to do when they're supposed to do it. That sounds like, not being a good leader, that sounds like being a really good cog in some machine. And you go, to a certain extent, that's okay. I don't think it's sinful or evil, but I don't think it should be something particularly striven for, because I can pick up how to be a good cog in the machine about 5 minutes. And then after I'm tired and bored with it, I don't really want to be involved in it anymore. I'm out of there. So, education is a strange animal. I really am. I pretty much use the 150-year rule with education too. I said it's something that 150 years ago, a lot of people just kind of avoided. And we had more innovation. We had more enterprise. In the past, 150 years ago, than we do today. And you go, wow, it must not be a function of schooling. You know, the better schooled you are, the better you're going to do with this, this, and this. And you go, I can't speak to that. I'm not saying to get rid of it entirely. Like I said, I'm not into total unschooling. Although, to be honest, if you really want to create incredible people that aren't just snap fit parts for 20 things, when somebody puts up a resume, when somebody puts up a job announcement, they are telling you what kind of snap fit part they want for a certain place in their company. When you put up your resume, you're trying to tell somebody that you may be a snap fit. Now, those two things never coincide, but you get called by a recruiter who's looking at these things and says there's probably enough to make it worthwhile and you can make up for the rest. And at the end of the day, it's like, I am not interested on any level at all of being any of this. I'm just doing this for the money. Horrible motivation. And I'm not saying that just because it's like, oh, well, that's the politically correct thing to say, is you need to be motivated by your loves to go, no, I think it's not particularly the loves, you know, a job that you love going to every single day. And you talk to people that are like that, it's like, man, how much Kool-Aid are you drinking? How much wine do you consume when you go home at night to convince yourself that this is true? You know, says the only thing good about the job is the job stops every day and you leave the job and you go and you do the things that you want to do. And you go, that's where it's like, oh, I love my work. You know, if it pays well, that works really well for those kinds of people. It's just, I'm happy for them, I suppose. I have no interest in the work I do now, never really did, but the pay is really good. That's why I continue to do it. I'm in a circumstance where it's not really that vexing. Except from totally other thing, paperwork, trying to get everything done in this weird organized way they have. And I said, it's not a bad thing, it's just that I don't want to have to be able to do it. I don't want to need to do it. Yet it's there, yet it has to be done, yet you just continue to pound away at it. Anyway, so. It comes out of those things that if I don't pay attention, I'm going to run right off a road. There's enough people using this road. You know, I may just do the one to Melrose because I think fewer people use that road than this one. Ugh, sheesh. All right. Just want to know that you have options. You know that children are in your care. And that when you hand off large swaths of the purpose of parenting institutions, you shouldn't be surprised if they just go, if your children are just nuts, go crazy. I'm not unhappy with what my children have done. I don't know how my wife feels about it. I think she has this interesting idea in her head, but that's fine. You know, we are two very, very different people. He's had to put up with a lot of things that I thought our family needed to be up to. And to a certain extent, she dealt with it. Anyway, this is just going to be a regular recording of just smack, because that's all it is, smack. I'll talk to you later.